This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The college experience can be a lot of different things. For some kids, it's a necessary rung on the economic ladder, a way to start a career. For others, the only hard part is getting in, and they coast for the next 4 or 5 years. Some kids pore over poetry and philosophy. Others stick tightly, some say obsess, on the career track, padding their resumes to land that big-time job. There are all kinds of colleges, too. Elite schools, jock schools, party schools, diploma factories, and sometimes all of them can be found at the same university. Lately, a new chapter in the long-running debate about the purpose and responsibility of education has developed. It's about critical thinking and intellectual rigor. Some academics complain that campuses are no longer the natural host of the intellectual life, that grade inflation, jockocracy, and the pure practicalities of a university education are selling kids and their college experience short. Are they right? If you're a student, what do you want out of college? If you're a professor, what are you seeing amongst your students? And if you're a parent who's paying for all of this, what do you want for your money? Tell us about your experience. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Joining us now by phone is John Fleming, who recently raised some of these issues at Princeton University, where he teaches English. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
Now, you recently wrote a series of articles where you said there was a spirit of anti-intellectualism at Princeton. What prompted you to say that?
Well, as a matter of fact, I was responding to a very exciting initiative taken by the student government, who took out a full-page ad in the Daily Princetonian, our daily newspaper, raising this issue, saying this is something that everybody at Princeton has been talking about sub rosa for quite a while, and why don't we bring it out into the open. So that was the context in which I was writing. Now, obviously, the question of anti-intellectualism at a place like Princeton involves a certain degree of paradox. As one of the students who didn't agree with what I my point at all wrote in and said, this place is more like an intellectual paradise than an intellectual wasteland. And I suppose if you compare it with other random sites in the country, that probably is true. But nonetheless, what I notice, and a lot of my colleagues notice, and even a lot of students notice, is that there is a strange separation in the minds of a lot of our students between their academic work, which they go at hammer and tongs roughly between 10 a.m. on Tuesday and about 4:30 on Thursday afternoon, and a social life that is, I would say, anti-intellectual, that is completely different from the workday world. In fact, the motto here, the cliche motto, is we work hard, but then we play hard. Now, my idea, and the idea I think that most of us have of a liberal education, is that it is something that enriches your entire life and is not segmented into sections of that kind.
Well, I'm not the first to point out that this was a concern for then-Princeton President Woodrow Wilson 100 years ago. This is obviously not a new debate, but what's new about this particular chapter of it, do you think?
Well, I'm not sure that that it is terribly new. I mean, the academics are by nature people who are constantly reinventing the wheel, and when they're not reinventing the wheel, they're reinventing the flat tire. And I think we've done a fair amount of that. We've done a fair amount of that here. This is almost a stylistic thing. I could never, I mean, although I'm perfectly qualified to be a professor at Princeton, I would never get in as a freshman. I don't have the board scores or the extracurriculars. I know that we have extremely able and talented students, but somehow, among a great number of them, it simply is not cool to be seen really to be interested in ideas in a way that goes on to inform your daily life. On this campus, as on far too many campuses in the in the country. There's a highly trivial social life that involves, in some cases, lots of abusive drinking and stuff like that. And I just think it's a terrible waste of a fantastic opportunity for students.
Well, how much of that is the student's responsibility, and how much is of this atmosphere that you're talking about is the school's responsibility?
Well, I think basically it is the school's responsibility, or it's our responsibility to create a climate and set a standard and offer opportunities. But on the other hand, I think it is the student's responsibility to sort of rise to those. Now, what a lot of students tell me or say to me is, what difference does it make if I'm working hard, if I'm writing the papers for your courses and my other courses, if I'm not merely passing my courses but doing very well, and this is a place where everybody... Lake Wobegon is way above average, and there are high grades for everybody and so forth. What skin is that off your nose? I can only answer them in spiritual or stylistic terms as well. I mean, they're just missing. This is the one great opportunity I think that people are going to have in their lives, most people, really to throw themselves with enthusiasm into all sorts of cultural, intellectual, athletic, yes, other social opportunities. I think they ought to do all of them. And what I'm finding is that people here and at other campuses tend to settle for a rather narrow slice of the opportunities that are available.
Well, as we talk about other campuses, let's bring somebody else into the conversation. Joining us now from Kent State University in Ohio is another professor of English. Kimberly Weinbrenner joins us. Good of you to be with us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to this conversation. Are you concerned about a lack of intellectual rigor on the campus there at Kent State?
To a certain extent, of course. You know, we always hope that our students will push themselves a little bit harder than they do.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that I'm so concerned about what they do. They are very young. The average age of our freshmen, for instance, is 19. And I'd like to think that, they will do some frivolous socializing at 19.
So let me read you both an email that we got, from Liz. She writes, I went to college so I could get a better job, a career. I certainly didn't go simply to expand my capacity for critical thought. That came along with the pursuit of a practical career, engineering, but there's no way I would have gone simply for that reason. I came from a working-class family, first to go to college, first to move into the professional class. The view of college university as a place to expand critical thought seems to be an artifact of the 19th century aristocracy. College is an enhancement to oneself, not as a means to an end, as it currently is. Criticize if you will, but it's practical, pragmatic, and necessary. I do have a number of PhD friends who considered my view of college as just short of trade school. Oh well. Kimberly, it's Weinbrenner, is that the is she speaking for more than one person?
Probably. I would assume. I don't know that I see those things as always being so dissimilar. I think that college can do a variety of things. Of course, for many of my students, they are interested in what kind of job they're going to get after they complete their 4-year, which is now usually a 5-year or 6-year degree. Many of them go into debt to pay for their undergraduate degree. So it is.
And many of their parents do, too.
Right. And so it might be a little hypocritical of us or foolish of us not to acknowledge that that is going to be something that our students are concerned with. However, I do think that critical thinking skills are part of what most employers would look for, as well as college professors. I mean, we want our students to be able to think.
Well, John Fleming, Princeton has certainly always been seen as, for a lot of people, it's been a ticket to a good job on Wall Street or with a bank.
Oh, yes. That is absolutely true. That is, the sociologists and economists and so on can give you the statistics to show you just how much more you will earn during your lifetime if you have a college degree, as opposed to facing the job market at the end of high school. There's no question about that. And in fact, with the basically the essential debauching of the secondary school education, that is to say, these days it really doesn't mean much, if anything, to have a terminal high school diploma. College is probably some kind of college or advanced education is a near necessity for entering the job market. And as society gets more complicated, that is going to become even more true, and the great divide that separates the haves from the have-nots, one of the determinants of that divide, obviously, is going to be whether or not you've had higher education. Now, having said all that, it is still the case that a college education, especially in the liberal arts, I mean, there are other things that one can study, obviously, but a liberal education clearly ought to have at its as its one of its principal goals what we would call self-development. In a social sense, it is preparing the kind of citizens we need to live in a complex democracy. That is, the kind of citizens who actually can grasp issues and elect candidates and so forth and so on. So there's a real social dimension to this as well. Mm-hmm. But I'm just thinking of it as a an opportunity that in many cases is, if not being totally wasted, that'd be putting it too strong, people are not getting the most out of the experience. I mean, I'm always meeting seniors here at Princeton who, as they come to the end of their career, have never once, for example, gone to the university art museum, which just happens to be a terrific museum, and people come from hundreds of miles away to see the paintings that are hanging. They do, I run into students who have never once gone and listened to the university orchestra. You name it. Maybe it's also, maybe they never once have gone to watch a football game. Whatever it is far too easy to slip in to a rather confined, habitual mode of conducting your college career. And what I'm trying to do, and I think what other people are trying to do, is simply challenge students to look around and seize some of the incredible opportunities that are uniquely going to be available to them during this 1 4-year period of their life.
Kimberly Weinbrenner, we just have about a minute or so, but I wanted to get a response from you.
Well, I think that there will always be students who don't take advantage of all the opportunities that college campuses offer, but I think that there are students who do. In fact, I'm meeting with a group of students. As soon as we get off the phone, they're planning. It's an organization of English students, and they're planning to go see an opera together. So and these are students, for many of them, it'll be the first time they've ever seen an opera. So, and it's being offered on campus. So I think that some students do take advantage of the other amenities of a college education. Well, not all of them do, but...
Well, thanks to you both. Appreciate it. That was Kimberly Weinbrenner, who's an English professor at Kent State University in Ohio. Good luck with your meeting.
Thank you.
And I hope you enjoy the opera.
Oh, we will.
And also, John Fleming, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
John Fleming recently raised the issue of intellectual rigor on the campus at Princeton University, where he teaches English. We're talking about intellectual life on college campuses, and we'll take more of your calls when we come back from a break. 800-989-8255. We'll also be joined by Freeman Habrowski, who's president of the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Joining us now on the line is Freeman Habrowski. He's president of the University of Maryland's Baltimore County campus. Good of you to join us today.
Thank you.
And we're talking about intellectual life on campus. Is it thriving or declining? We were speaking earlier with professors from Kent State University and Princeton. What about there at UMBC? Are intellectual pursuits lagging on campus?
You know, we're very proud of the culture culture of our campus. This is a place where it's actually cool to be a nerd. In fact, some people say I'm the mega nerd, and we take great pleasure in focusing on the life of the mind in many ways.
Well, I should point out that many people in our audience may be familiar with the University of Maryland for its accomplishments in college basketball, the NCAA Division I champions last year, or its burgeoning football program. That's at the campus at College Park. UMBC is famous for its chess team.
That is right. We have worked very hard over the past decade to create an environment in which students will pursue a variety of intellectual activities, from chess to Model United Nations to debate, and a lot of efforts involved in community service and reflection. And people come here because we take the time to think about what it means to become an educated person.
Well, we've also been talking about culture. UMBC is an urban campus. And do you have a particular problem attracting and promoting students who are interested in pursuit of the intellectual life?
We do not. We've developed this reputation. We are outside the city of Baltimore, but it is an honors campus. The typical student was in the honor society, but more important than grades or the high test scores, we talk about this place as an institution that recruits students who want to talk about ideas. Whether someone is planning to major in science or in philosophy, we ask one basic question. Why do you want to come to college? Is it simply because your parents told you that, or is it because you're wanting more? And we emphasize the need to want more than money, to want more than prestige and power, and to think about the value of this experience as a journey. And we talk about that with freshmen during that first period in the first semester and throughout their experience here. We are asking them questions about the meaning of the education they're receiving, about the kinds of activities they are involved in. And most important, we're getting them to think about themselves and their future in a very different way.
From the school's point of view, you said you've been working on it. First of all, what did you need to work on, and what do you continue to need to work on?
Well, we have to support faculty, clearly, in their work. These are research faculty who care about undergraduates, and while we have doctoral programs, we are working to make sure we're doing what's necessary to help undergraduates not only succeed academically, but to grow and develop as people here, because we talk a great deal about producing leaders, and we want the students who've thought about the hard questions of the day, who have taken the time to go into Baltimore and to work with poor children and to come back and to look at how that work in the city relates to what they're studying in their classes, and to take the time to reflect on the experiences. That's the most important part of this effort. It is taking the time to reflect on the significance of what they're doing each day.
Our telephone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email address, TOTN at NPR.org. Let's go to Craig, who joins us on the line from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yes. I had a quick question, perhaps rhetorical, and then an observation. I'm a teacher, and the question is, has it not always been this way in the U.S., not campuses necessarily, but U.S. American society in general, a love of the practical, not necessarily being anti-intellectual, let's just say a love of the practical. De Tocqueville mentions it in Democracy in America, why so many men have such great ambitions to accomplish very practical things. I'm a teacher, and I see it among my own students. I'm a teacher in an independent school, and I have some of the most capable students, but the seniors I used to teach, as capable as they were and as interested in ideas as they were, wanted to attend the best university, hopefully to land a job, make a lot of money, and perhaps reflect on these things in a million-dollar home. So...
He sounds like somebody we'd all like to have as a teacher, quite frankly. I don't disagree with him at all. The fact is that too often in our society, children get the message that what is important is making money or having a big home or thinking about prestige and power. And our challenge in universities and in schools is, first of all, to excite students about learning itself, just the love of learning itself, and then to help them them understand that knowledge is power, not simply power to make money, but that they can, as we talk here, they can actually change the world. We're interested in having students who are ethical, who are compassionate, who care about other people, who understand that we've got some real problems in our country, who understand that there are connections between our country and the rest of the world. I mean, it seems to me that any university or school should be focusing on all of the interesting international questions involving the potential for war right now. And these are things that will in many ways help students understand why it's important to study history and political science and literature and philosophy.
Craig, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And
great show.
Good luck with your class.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Let's go now to David, who's on the line in Boston.
How you doing?
Okay.
Hi.
My question is, I am was educated as an engineer about 10 years ago, and now I've returned to graduate school. Uh-huh. And what I've found returning is that things like the U.S. News and World Report rating systems have actually adversely affected the academic life on campus, specifically the idea of student retention being an important positive note for a school. And, you know, when I was a freshman in engineering school, they said, you know, look to the left, look to the right, you know, two out of three, you aren't going to make it through this program. And it kind of fostered the competition and the fear to get people to work real hard. And now with retention as being a positive note, you know, a small engineering college, I went to Worcester Polytech here in Massachusetts, mm-hmm. They can't really flunk people out because it's actually counted against them in the ratings.
It's an interesting observation. Let me give you a different impression. I'm a mathematician. I love math. I get goosebumps doing math problems. All right, but I also get goosebumps reading novels. But the fact is that when I was in college 30 years ago, more than 30 years ago, the dean the first semester said, look at the student to your left, look at the student to your right. Two of you will not graduate. And it's very interesting that I have been so taken by that thought, because what happens is it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. What happened was, what you may not realize is that while you were bright and made it in engineering, and while some others may have made it, large numbers of students didn't make it. And one of our challenges in math and science and engineering is that we have the tendency to say to many students they won't make it, and they don't. But the problem is this happens in colleges in general. I mean, we need to find ways to encourage students to work hard, to come up to a standard, and to succeed. And so I say to our freshmen, look at the student to your left, look at the student to your right. Our goal is to make sure all three of you at UMBC graduate, but in so doing, you will learn to work very, very hard. So we have to have both messages, that they can succeed, but also we'll have people who will care about them and who will push them to work hard and to do their best.
Well, following on David's point, I wanted to read this email we got from Paul in St. Louis. One of the main things which has led to a decline in colleges is student ratings of teachers, he writes. If you teach a rigorous course, you get terrible evaluations. Evaluations are important at tenure time. When I was evaluated for my required mathematically based courses, every single evaluation was needed to be in hand. These evaluations drive teachers to make courses less difficult, more spoon-fed, and other things. Ban evaluations, and you'll see more rigorous courses.
That's very interesting. I appreciate his comment, and I suppose that the it depends on the situation. I know that here, I'm always amazed that some of our most rigorous teachers get the best evaluations, and people may say this professor was really hard, or I didn't like the grade I received. But they will also, in a very honest way, talk about the ability of that teacher to express ideas clearly, to connect to the students, to excite students about the ideas. They'll talk about the evaluation of testing. I have more confidence in students in general than that. But I think he's right. It depends on the circumstances. It depends on the institution.
David, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I had one other comment that I'd love to hear your guest's opinion on, which was that the advent and progression of technology in math and science and engineering has got to the point that I actually don't believe a bachelor's degree in engineering or science is anything better than a trade school education was 20 years ago. And that's my final comment, and I'd love to hear his opinion.
I am fascinated by his comment only because I think that the accrediting bodies have worked very hard to broaden the engineering education. We have engineering here, and if you look at what the accreditation agencies say, what the American Association of Colleges and Universities are talking about, all these groups are talking about the need to make sure that students are broadly and liberally educated. Now, I can't speak for other institutions, but here at UMBC, we want the engineering student to take courses in literature and philosophy. We make sure that those students take courses in languages because we do want people to be broadly educated and not simply technicians. He's absolutely right. We should be making sure that the bachelor's level education represents a true education, a liberal education, one that has prepared a student to speak well, to think critically, and to be able to look at the larger context of situations.
David, thanks very much for the phone call.
Have a nice day.
Freeman Hrabowski, earlier we were talking with John Fleming at the campus about teaches English at Princeton University. He was talking about the culture there among some students who regarded it as to be, it's uncool to be intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
In some urban campuses, you get in some minority communities, it's considered to be, you know, acting white to be intellectual.
Yeah.
How do you combat that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. My colleagues and I have written two books on raising high-achieving African-Americans in science. My name is Polish. I'm actually African-American, and I spent a lot of time thinking about the question of increasing the number of America's children who will want to be smart, particularly looking at minority kids, Hispanic kids, black kids. And for us at the university, what we have done is to create programs that celebrate not just the life of the mind, but the idea of African-Americans being very smart. And one of our programs, the Meyerhoff Scholars Program, focuses on, and this is in a predominantly white setting, but focuses on producing blacks who will become first-rate scientists. And these are people who will have the creativity, the broad education, the curiosity about science, a lot of undergraduate science research experience, and they'll go on for PhDs. We've become one of the leading producers of students going for PhDs. And what's significant about that is that these are people who are excited about research itself. It's getting students involved in the work, whether it's a student in science or somebody in a poetry class, that can help that student understand why it's important to be smart in our society.
Hmm. Our next caller is Rob, who's on the line with us from Savannah, Georgia.
Hi. I'm calling from Savannah. I'm actually on spring break. I attend a small liberal arts school in Ohio, Kenyon College.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to talk a little bit about the difference between a small liberal arts school and a big research university. I go to school in the middle of Ohio, absolute middle of nowhere, and someone was talking about the war debate earlier. The war debate is at an absolute fervor. Here we are in the middle of the cornfields, you know, talking about war when it affects us the least. Also, I wanted to talk about professors being stressed to do research more than being stressed to teach.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a problem we see on a lot of the big research universities. I have friends that go to, you know, Madison and Charlottesville, the best big universities in the country, and they've never talked to a teacher before because their teachers are so wrapped up in research. And I just wanted to talk about that a little bit.
He makes very good points about the value of a liberal arts college. I attended one myself in Virginia at Hampton. And interestingly, one of the points that I make about UMBC all the time is that my colleagues, first of all, are research faculty, but we have recruited an entire faculty who care about students deeply. And what does that mean? Well, it means that the faculty bring the students into the research. It means that this is a research campus that encourages students in their freshman and sophomore years to become involved in labs or to work on interesting projects in the arts or to get involved in research in politics in Annapolis or in Washington. And in connecting faculty and students, we can bring the students into the discipline and help them appreciate what they can learn from that discipline and how that discipline can actually shed a lot of light on the problems we face in our society. And so I think the point should be that institutions make decisions about what's important on those campuses. And it is very true that liberal arts colleges do a great job of connecting to students. But it's also true that there are research campuses like UMBC that have made the decision to make undergraduates important and to pull those students into the research.
We're speaking with Freeman Hrabowski, who's president of the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And our next caller is Damien, who's on the line from Reno, Nevada.
Hi.
Hi.
Neil, it's great to hear you. Great to be on the show.
Hey, I just want to say I just recently graduated with a chemical engineering degree, mm-hmm. and I put in, you know, at least 80 hours a week, and on my studies, and they're all engineering and science based,
mm-hmm.
and all that time and effort, there's just no time for discussions, and that was one of the things I was really looking forward to when I went to college, was, you know, sitting down with peers and discussing the topics of the day and developing some of that more liberal education background, and there was just no time for it, and the people I went to school with had no desire to do that either.
Hmm.
And I just wanted to talk about that and what the school could do to help foster an environment more like that, because I think that's really important for people. You know, I think that our college graduates are looked to as kind of leaders, you know,
yes,
in the community, and they need to be talking to people and helping people to come to grips with issues of the day, you know, so we're not just relying on mass media,
yes,
to give us our opinions on things.
You make excellent points, and you also show me that you have the right attitude. I mean, the first thing I'm going to say to you is that I think it's very important that you continue to keep that attitude and that you take the time to read broadly and talk about books.
Yeah, but without naming names, did Damien School sell him short?
Well, you know, it is unfortunate. If he didn't have the opportunity to read books and to talk about ideas and to take a variety of courses in addition to the engineering, then he did not get all of what one should get from an education in engineering. I actually spoke to about 50 deans of engineering about a couple of months ago, and one of the things we were talking about was how to prepare students to become engineers, and I would say to a person, those people whom I spoke to really do believe that we have to prepare students to be much broader in their perspectives, and they want students who can write well and speak well and are interested in ideas broadly. And so the challenge we face in our society is that a number of universities are still needing to rethink how they deliver the education. Now, what I will tell you about my own campus is, because we require all the engineering courses and the strong liberal arts background, many students are not able to finish in 4 years. I will tell you that a number of students decide, rather than rushing through in four, to work and finish in 4.5 or 5, which allows them to do well in the courses, to have the opportunity to talk about ideas, to take a variety of courses beyond the engineering, and to reflect on what it means to be a leader in that discipline. And I think that's important. But it is a challenge to balance all of the technical requirements.
I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. Damien, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Good luck to you, Damien.
And President Freeman Hrabowski of UMBC, thank you very much.
I enjoyed it.
We'll be back with more after a short break. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.